James Clear is one of the world's leading experts on habit formation. He is known for his ability to distill complex topics into simple behaviors that can be easily applied to daily life and work. His new book, Atomic Habits, Tiny Changes, Remarkable Results, offers a framework for improving habits every day. Clear looks to reveal practical strategies that will teach you how to form good habits, break bad ones, and master the tiny behaviors that lead to extraordinary results. He draws on ideas from biology, psychology, and neuroscience to create an easy-to-understand guide for making good habits inevitable and bad habits impossible. The backbone of Atomic Habits is a four-step model: cue, craving, response, and reward. What does all that mean? We will discuss it in a moment. James Clear is the creator of the Habits Academy, which is a premier training platform for organizations and individuals that are interested in building better habits in life and in work. And it's a great pleasure to welcome James Clear to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Hello, good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Again, the name of the book is Atomic Habits. So what makes a habit an atomic habit?
Well, I chose the phrase for three reasons. So the first meaning of the word atomic is tiny or small, like an atom. And that's kind of a core piece of my philosophy, that habits should be small and easy to do. The second meaning of the word atomic is the one that's often overlooked, which is the fundamental unit in a larger system. So atoms can build into molecules, molecules can build into compounds, and so on. And in a way, habits are sort of like the atoms of our life. Like, they're these small fundamental routines or patterns you follow each day. And when you put them all together, you end up with the system that comprises your daily routine. And then the third and final meaning of the word atomic is the source of immense energy or power. And so I think if you combine all three of those meanings, you sort of understand the narrative arc of the book, which is, if you make changes that are small and easy to do, little 1% improvements, and you layer them on top of each other, like units in a larger system, then you can end up with some really powerful or remarkable results in the long run.
Is it ever too late?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I guess it could be too late if you were dead, but assuming you're still alive and willing to work.
Assuming you're still alive.
There are always options.
All right.
Yeah.
So now options. Now that's an interesting phrase. So options. How do we look and understand those options of what is available to us to change a behavior that we want to change?
That's a good question. So I think there are two ways to answer this. So the first is, it's really hard to change a behavior if you're not aware of it. Now, that sounds simple, but by definition, a habit is a behavior that has been performed enough times to be more or less automatic, can be done more or less without thinking. And many people don't realize that they cover their mouth each time when they laugh, or that they apologize every time before they ask a question, or that they unplug the toaster after each use, or that they use the word awesome in conversation all the time. These are all habits that are so non-conscious, so automatic, that if you want to change them, you really need to become aware of them. And so in the book, I talk about this process of building a habit scorecard, where you kind of go through your day in very granular detail, and then to start to assign a positive or a negative or a neutral score to the different habits that you're performing. And the whole point of that exercise is not to judge yourself for your faults or feel guilty for your bad habits, but just to become aware of them so that you have a chance to redesign them. So that's the first way to answer that question.
Let me just pause you there, because I have enough self-loathing as it is. I don't know that I could necessarily go through that process. So how do you go in such a granular way without feeling, as you said, being overly critical of, oh, God, you know, because I would think once you got to about 12, you'd be ready to hang it up.
Yeah, quite possibly. So here's just a quick example. Let's say that you wake up and you're starting to build your habit scorecard and you're thinking through your day and you're like, all right, I wake up, I turn off my alarm, I start to browse Instagram on my phone or scroll through Facebook, I get out of bed, I make the bed, I take a shower, and so on. And as you're going through that list, you realize pretty quickly, wow, the second or third thing I do each day is I check social media. Should I really be looking at Instagram before I've even taken a step out of bed? And it's easy to fall into a spiral of, as you say, self-loathing, right? Or some feel guilty for that.
Yeah.
But what you're really looking to do is to just observe yourself kind of like an outside observer, sort of like you're at the zoo and you're watching an animal and you're like, oh, how interesting that they would do that. Like you're kind of looking at yourself with that same lens. And once you do that, you realize, huh, interesting. I check Instagram before I get out of bed each day. What's something I could do to change that? And then you start to think about how you could design that behavior. So, for example, maybe you buy an actual alarm clock on Amazon for $8 or $10 or something, and you charge your phone in the kitchen each night rather than your bedroom. And so that's a little simple adjustment that then allows you to change that. But the only reason you're allowed to, you're able to change that habit now is because you had that conversation with yourself and became aware of it in the first place. And so the process of behavior change almost always starts with some form of awareness.
So we were talking about the changing, and you said there was one way to answer the question. So the other way of answering the question is what?
Yeah, so the other way of answering this, so the first way is about like thinking through your habits and the, trying to address them in some kind of like very tactical way by listing out those habits and behaviors. The other way of addressing that question is by thinking about the type of environment that you surround yourself in. So this could be either the physical environment or the social environment. So in the case of the physical environment, our habits are often a response to the environment that we find ourselves in. So for example, a lot of people feel like they watch too much television. But if you walk into pretty much any living room in America, where do all the couches and chairs face? They all face the TV. So what is that room designed to get you to do? Right? It's like constantly moving you or nudging you in that direction. Now, there are a variety of choices you could take there. You could move the chair so that it doesn't face the TV and it looks at a coffee table with a book instead. Or you could put the television inside a wall unit or a cabinet so that you're less likely to see it. You could unplug the TV after each use and then only plug it back in if you can say the name of the show that you want to watch. So you're not allowed to just like mindlessly turn it on and find something.
Okay, that's a great idea. All right.
All of these are just little strategies to try to increase the amount of friction in the environment so that you are more likely to fall into the good habits and less likely to slide into the bad ones. And then, you know, now we're talking about physical environment, but something similar is true for the social environment. You know, the tribes that we are a part of nudge us in certain directions to build particular habits. If you move into a new neighborhood and you walk outside on Tuesday night and you see, oh, all of my neighbors have their recycling bins out, you think, huh, I need to sign up for recycling. I guess that's a habit that like we do in this neighborhood. And many of our habits are like that. They're socially reinforced. And so if you can join a tribe, join a group, surround yourself by people where your desired behavior is the normal behavior for that group, then it becomes much easier to stick to it in the long run.
But that can be a blessing and a curse, right? Because I mean, part of the moving into that neighborhood is that there's a McDonald's in every corner or a fast food place in every corner, and you're inclined to stop there before you go home. So that's a tribe too. I mean, there's decisions that have to be made there as well.
So that's a great point, and this is something I say very early in Atomic Habits, which is all the strategies that I talk about in the book are a double-edged sword. They can either work for you or against you, and this is one of the reasons why understanding the mechanics of a habit, how it works, how it's formed, how to change it and alter it to your specifications and liking, why that's such a crucial life skill, because if you don't pay attention, all of a sudden your habits are being shaped in a direction that's not benefiting you. Whereas if you take control, if you kind of take the reins and start to think through these things carefully, then you can start to design an environment that's more likely to push you in the right direction rather than the wrong one.
I mentioned the four-step model of habits: cue, craving, response, and reward. So talk a little bit about those and ultimately why they're important.
So this is just a simple way of thinking about what is a habit, how does it work, how can I understand it, and what can I do to change it. And these four steps, pretty much any habit is going to go through these. So the first step is cue, which is just the cue is the thing that gets your attention. So if you walk into a kitchen, you see a plate of cookies, that's a visual cue that starts the habit of eating a cookie. Or if your phone buzzes in your pocket, that's a tactile cue that signals the start of the habit of pulling your phone out. The second step is the craving. So the craving is about how you interpret the cue. It's what you think it means. So So if you walk into a room and you see a pack of cigarettes sitting on a table, if you're a smoker, you interpret that as, oh, I have this craving to smoke. I want to grab a cigarette and so on. If you're someone who's never smoked, then that cue doesn't mean anything. It's just a pack of cigarettes and you move on. You don't have the craving to act. And so the craving is where you kind of experience that motivation to do something. And that's contingent on how you interpret the cue or the meaning you assign to it. The third stage is the response. So that's the habit itself, eating the chip or doing the workout or smoking the cigarette or so on. And then finally, there is some kind of outcome. And if the outcome is positive, then there's a reward, and that's the fourth stage. And habits need to be rewarding. They need to have some kind of satisfaction or pleasure or enjoyment associated with them for them to stick. If a habit is not rewarding, if it has a consequence or pain associated with it, then naturally you want to avoid it next time. And this is really crucial for building good habits, because what you find is that the cost of your good habits is often in the present, and the cost of your bad habits is often in the future. So eating a donut is great right now. The immediate outcome is it's sweet, it's sugary, it's tasty. It's only the ultimate outcome that if you repeat that every day for a month or a year or so on, that's unfavorable. Whereas good habits are the reverse. The immediate outcome of going to the gym is, well, you sweat, it's kind of effortful, takes sacrifice, but the ultimate outcome is great. And so a lot of the battle of building good habits and making them rewarding, getting them to stick, is finding a way to be satisfied in the moment, right? It's like choosing the form of the habit that brings you that immediate satisfaction while you're waiting for the long-term rewards to accrue. So if it's exercise, well, not everybody has to work out like a bodybuilder. You know, you could go rock climbing or hiking or take a walk in your neighborhood or do yoga or Pilates, but choose the one that makes you feel good in the moment, because if it feels good in the moment, you'll want to show up again the next day, and eventually that long-term outcome will come as well.
I'm going to go back to the list for a second. Once you do that, the granular approach, as you call it, and you go through and you identify what is a habit and things that you would like to alter, do you recommend taking on one at a time, or is it all in, or how should you approach that?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, so the short answer is I tend to recommend doing one at a time. But the reason is because there's often more than one thing wrapped up in a habit. Like you might say something like, all right, I want to start eating healthier. And we often say that phrase as if it's just one thing. But if you want to change your nutrition and diet strategy, then there are actually quite a few things that may need to change. You know, like you need to have different grocery shopping habits. You need to have new meal planning habits. You need to have different cooking habits. Maybe you need to learn knife skills or something like that, or figure out how to clean up after each meal, because normally you've been eating out for dinner, things like that. So there are quite a few things associated with that one change. And for that reason, I think it's effective to just focus on one area at a time.
Everything you are saying makes so much sense and seems logical beyond logical. And yet, why don't more of us do it?
It's a good question. I think that a lot of it comes down to the systems and environment that we are in each day. You know, a lot of the things that I've said so far, make your habits easy and convenient, change the environment so it's obvious and you can see the cues of your good habits. A lot of those things are not true by default. When you're handed, a cell phone or a device, the cues are not necessarily designed in your favor. Or when you, as you said a few moments ago, move to a new neighborhood, it's not that the healthy food is the most visible one. There is the McDonald's on the corner or other fast food restaurants that you pass on your way to work and things like that. And so we all inherit a world that is not necessarily designed with your best interest in mind. And that's not to say that like people are trying to be vindictive or that the world is out to get you, but it's just that there are 7 billion people in the world, and not all of them have the same goals or needs that you do. And so if you want to design habits that serve you, that help you live your best life and show up in a way that's productive and efficient, then it's your responsibility to shape your little corner of the universe in a way that does allow you to do that. And it's very unlikely that you're going to inherit an environment that does that by default. And so I think because of that, it makes it challenging for us to build good habits naturally. You know, it's just unlikely that you get the perfect setup for that ideal life that you want. And so it takes work and energy to create that. But once you understand how it works, and of course, that's ultimately one of the purposes that that I had in mind when I wrote Atomic Habits, is to kind of, you know, pull back the curtain a little bit, understand what's going on internally and what we can do about it. And if you understand that a little better, then I think you're better positioned to maybe overcome that environmental mismatch and create habits that you actually want.
James Clear is the author of the new book, Atomic Habits, Tiny Changes, Remarkable Results. The book is published by Avery. James, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for the time. I appreciate it. Again, James Clear is the author of the book, Atomic Habits. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.